With everything going on with and to journalists these days, it was inspiring and helpful to me to come across a little essay written by the well-known World War II correspondent and broadcast journalist Edward Murrow. These past few days, I learned this for the first time. He was born in Polecat Creek, North Carolina, in 1908, just north of Greensboro. He is perhaps most well known for being a critic of Joseph McCarthy and the McCarthy era in the 1950s and all the purges of communists and that era. But in 1950, he and a few colleagues instituted this new radio series, This I Believe, which we know today, but I was not aware of this history of it. And it was a new thing in 1950. And in this series, you know, people from all walks of life would offer a few brief reflections on the beliefs, their personal beliefs and philosophies, every night on the radio. And it became popular almost immediately, because in that time, and again in the early 1950s, listeners at home were just hungry for these kinds of testimonies. And this written introduction to the series is just so well written. Mr. Murrow wrote these resonant words: "We hardly need to be reminded that we are living in an age of confusion. A lot of us have traded our beliefs for bitterness and cynicism, or for a heavy package of despair, or even a quivering portion of hysteria," he wrote. "Opinions can be picked up cheap in the marketplace, where such commodities as courage and fortitude and faith are in alarmingly short supply." 1950, he wrote that. He went on to say, "Around us all there is an enveloping cloud of fear." And he named three different kinds of fear. Fear, physical fear, which causes people to flee. Mental fear, which makes us afraid of each other and afraid of what's happening. And then this creeping fear of doubt. Doubt in the very institutions that we count on and maybe even take for granted. He said, given these shaky times in society, This I Believe was designed to help people articulate their fundamental convictions, what they truly believe, the things that ground and guide them. And essentially to answer this question: what truths can a human being afford to furnish the cluttered, nervous rooms of his mind when he has no real idea how long a lease he has on the future? What truths can we afford to furnish? It's a good question. Because we too live in such uncertain and unnerving times. Times that make us wonder, like Job, where God is. Times that challenge our faith and compel us to hold the truths we hold dear up to the light and ask ourselves, what truths guide us? Who do we follow? What beliefs do we cherish when there is such widespread confusion over what is true and what is fiction? And indeed, a quivering portion of hysteria hovers around. I think my last letter to our senators verged into that hysteria category. I don't know about you, but as a commentator Van Jones said a few years ago in response to a resurgence of racist incidents, I am upset. I am upset. We live in an age of cover-ups and cruelties and schemes to deny basic human rights, an age of the sheer denial of our shared humanity, an age that challenges the imagination of hope and hurts the heart on a daily basis. Forces that divide are stronger than ever. Tyrants prosper while the poor suffer. Storms of all kinds threaten human life and life in all its forms and livelihoods too. And people with no other options forced to seek refuge at our own borders or at borders of wealthy countries around the world are met with closed hearts and closed doors. And those advocating freedom are met with persecution and worse. What the Arab world needs most is free expression, wrote Jamal Khashoggi in his very last column. For that, he is gone. These are fearful times indeed. And add to those all those levels of fear, there is another kind of prevalent fear. A fear that grips the disciples, just as it grips many of us. It is the fear of missing out. As I was scrolling through my Instagram feed the other day, and pointing out that almost 30 years ago, when I was in divinity school in Nashville, I used to babysit the young man who just received Country Music's Artist of the Year Award. My teenage daughter told me, "Mom, there is a thing, FOMO, fear of missing out." A new name for an ancient diagnosis. These days, this fear takes hold when you get so engaged with following social media sites and all the glamorous pictures and the amazing feats and adventures that your friends and colleagues and famous people are experiencing. And then you start to covet that kind of attention. And then when you come to your senses and take a break, you have this fear of missing out on what's really going on. This fear of not getting in on the glory. Someone said this fear is the Zebedee genes in our DNA at work. That compulsion to be spiffy giants and favored and noticed that James and John, the sons of Zebedee, experience. They are the very first disciples called. And yet they are the ones who ask, even now, after all this time with Jesus, they've been on the way, and he's just told them for the third time about his demise. They are on the threshold of Jerusalem. And the veil between life and death is as thin as it's ever been. They are nearly at the final steps of Jesus' certain end at the hands of the religious authorities and the Roman Empire, the hands of the crowd that's been stirred up. And James and John have the audacity to ask, "What's in it for us?" What kind of recognition are we going to get? If we continue this way with you, will you be sure we're in Jesus? Wow. If only we could hear how the questions we ask sound to Jesus. If only we could pause long enough to hear him ask each of us a question. Will you drink this cup? Will you drink this cup? Because so often we are more afraid to take that cup, the cup that Jesus offers, afraid to believe in the alternative way he sets before us, than we are even of the direst things happening around us. But the Christ cup is a cup of freedom. It is a cup of freedom from the cloud of fear. It is a cup of release from the power of tyranny. It is a cup that disintegrates divisions and rankings. It is a cup that erases boundaries between insiders and outsiders. It is a cup that unifies those who are honored and those who are shamed now and forever. That cup is about death to the superficial pursuits and the various masks and outfits we wear to keep us from being truly who we are in God's eyes. It is even as it was for John and James and the other disciples about letting go of all we think Jesus is supposed to be for us. Jesus is, as God is, much more than our preconceived ideas and Job-like litigious paradigms of interaction, more transcendent than our theological boxes can ever possibly describe. Yet Jesus is an imminent presence in the here and now who offers to share the cup of suffering like no one else can. But the cup he offers is the cup towards new life, too. It is a cup that liberates us from all the social and political powers we concoct to control and suppress each other, a cup that unbinds our spirits from the grasp of the demonic powers that hold the world captive and leads us to the only road we ever truly wanted to follow. As a poet, priest, and civil rights advocate, the amazing Pauli Murray wrote in one of her poems, "Always the dream was freedom." Freedom. James and John, freedom was their dream too. They didn't often know what that meant and didn't often know even what they were asking. But Jesus offered them the cup anyway. And they drank from it. And as they continued on the way after that day, eventually they understood what Jesus was asking of them. And they believed in the liberation of the love he was giving them. And they never looked back. Centuries after his martyrdom, James became known as the patron saint of pilgrims. Jesus offers us the cup for our pilgrimage on the way, too. May we find the courage to take a sip and believe and be free. Amen.